Well, I'm absolutely delighted to have back in the studios a very good friend and family friend and relation as well, Maurie Smith. Maurie has been extremely active for, I think, about 10 years at least that I know of. Major concerns with regards to Warragamba Dam and the impact that it has on other people's lives. And that's what I like about Maurie. He's a doer, he gets things done, and he hasn't relented or pulled back from this very important topic. And so, Maurie, on behalf of Spotlight, Darren and myself, thanks for joining us again today.
Oh, thanks, Jim. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you. And just to make sure everyone understands what Maurie is doing, we better actually say his formal title, which is quite lengthy.
Yeah, it is.
As lengthy this conversation is going to be. But Secretary and Communications Officer of the Hawkesbury Nepean Valley Flood Mitigation Action Committee.
That's right, Darren. Yes, we're a community-based group that are all about mitigating the effects of major flooding on the Hawkesbury River, and been proactive in that matter for at all levels of government right throughout state and federal. Pre my experience and now carrying on from the late John Miller, only just passed away, which I sort of took over John's role in the last couple of years prior to John leaving us. So, yeah, it's been a task that we need to do. It's something that we're pretty passionate about, and we've just had an environmental impact statement from Mother Nature. It delivered it to us in March 2021, where the Warragamba Dam was full and we had some major rainfalls. While they weren't catastrophic, they were still quite large rainfalls, and we had to spill the dam.
Well, Maurie, many of our listeners, they will still conjure in their mind those images of seeing the devastation and people in the SES boats and everything. It was just an incredible. And you worked in that as well. I remember you telling me about the stories of people and the devastation. What caused that, and what are some statistics around that particular event between March 17 and 21? Because it's only about 6-7 weeks ago.
Well, Jim, people may remember we had a flood in the February of last year, and at that stage that the Warragamba Dam was at a low level, so it was capable of holding the inflow of that event, and it was a major event. That in the Grose River, and which caused the bulk of that flooding, the flood we've just experienced, over 60% of that water that went down through the Hawkesbury Nepean Valley was actually generated out of the catchment area of Burragarang Valley, and then spilled into the Hawkesbury River because the dam could no longer hold that water, which is the intention of the airspace mitigating wall that's proposed by the state government to be built to hold that water back till the actual river flood levels subside, so they can release it steadily over the next 10 to 20 days, release so that this stops velocity and height of the flood. So at this point in time, there's nothing more they can do. The dam opens automatically. It's all computerised, runs on an automatic system. So as the inflow gets to the top of the dam, the dam automatically opens, and the drums, there's a series of drum gates. You can go to Sydney Water. There's a model that tells you how to do it on their website. But it automatically opens to allow the water to spill to keep up with the inflow. So the bigger the inflow, the bigger the spill. And we had that spill and achieved a height at Windsor about 100 mils higher than that of the 1988 flood at Windsor. But the velocity of the flood was quite extensive, and there's quite a lot of damage done to the riverbanks and trees uprooted and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, I was just looking overnight to the Hills Council infrastructure plan for the next year, and I think it's $500,000 to just repair River Road down there at Lower Portland because of the floods. And so that's even just a small ticket item of many of the sort of the damage that's come to infrastructure from this flood. Now, Maurie, if I may, before we go on, so you're talking about people before you who have done what you're doing now.
That's correct, yeah.
Passed away. Yeah. Now, you're here. You're not a spring chicken?
No.
Why is this taking so long to get completed?
It's not a complicated – it's a good question, great question, and it's not a really complicated answer, but it's political. So I may not have the years correct, but it was around 98, an EIS was completed and approved by both the World Heritage Council and adopted by the government of the day, and this was about to be undertaken. There was a change in government, and the government went in a different direction. we spoke about this before, things had to happen to the dam to be world-class, blah, blah, blah. So all that went forward. So this all went back into it back into the limbo stage. So then the government's changed again back and to the government that's willing to do this task. And so they've then reinvigorated this with a modern slant, taking on board all the old history they had done, all the previous records and also time they'd spent looking into it, applying modern science and a few other things. So that's one of the reasons why originally in 98 they were going to raise the wall to make an airspace of 22 metres high. Well, the government of the day and their advice from their consultants is that 14 metres is enough now to give the best cost-benefit ratio for holding back these floodwaters.
Sorry, Mike, just for our listeners to visualise, if I can say just for me, so that there's the flood wall as it exists. So we're talking about the airspace of another 14 metres above that, so to build that, is that...
That's correct, Jim. The proposal is now, I haven't seen a detailed drawing of this because it's in planning stages, but the talk is they're going to build another complete concrete wall, if you can imagine, from the base of the dam right up the face of the dam and then above the dam, 14 metres high. 17 metres on the side for the abutments to contain it for engineering purposes, for strength, but the actual water containment will be at 14 metres. And that will cause an inundation backwards up into the Burragarang Valley of about 0.07% of the volume of Burragarang Valley, which is a small volume which will be slowly inundated. So as the water runs in, it'll slowly rise behind this airspace wall rather than come out of the dam and go down the river at quite an accelerated speed, causing all the damage downstream, which will give... And I can't remember all the details, but back in 98, the CSIRO did a study on it. So all the bulk of the trees up in the Burragarang Valley are quite capable of being inundated for those few days. All the small marsupials and animals will get time to retreat because it's a very slow inundation. So the environmental impact upstream, it was not huge in the EIS. I haven't got the documents with me, but I did have some information on it. There are some indigenous sites. I think there was two identified in the previous, but there's probably more now because there's been more investigations done that were in danger. But there's also quite a numerous amount of indigenous sites downriver that get knocked around by this by the flood. So we've got a lot of bank erosion with this current flood. I've got to take my hat off to the state government and all the authorities. They have been absolutely proactive in the recovery system. All departments, everyone out there. There was a little bit of a lag when the changeover went from disaster to recovery, a couple of day lag, but that's understandable. Everyone's got to catch up. But it's still ongoing, and as much as tonight there is a public forum at Pitt Town Sportsman's Club, it's being run by Recovery New South Wales.
What time is that on, Murray?
That's going to be on at 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Uh-huh. And it's basically designed around giving business the opportunity to get to speak to people from, all the different technical advice for agriculture, you know, all the cleanup situations, you know, insurance advice, riverbank remediation, and mental health and all that sort of thing. So, during all this, because of our group, we are involved with talking with all levels of government and talking with Resilience New South Wales and Infrastructure New South Wales.
Well, Murray, we've got to commend you and your committee on being really steadfast about trying to find solutions to it. We're going to go to a little break and then we're going to come back and find out a little bit more, because I'm going to put you in the hot seat. I'm going to ask you to be the minister responsible, and what are you going to do about, what would you do ideally to get this fixed up? Because it's got to be fixed up.
Alive 90.5.
It's 21 minutes past 10, Alive 90.5 Spotlight with Jim and Darren.
I'm really delighted to have Murray Smith in our studios this morning talking to us about the implications and the potential and current damage that's been caused by floods over many years, excuse me, but particularly the March situation of this year that was so highly publicised. Murray, in an ideal world, what would you consider would be the best outcome, and how would you try and solve that? And I know it's a complex question, I'll put you on the spot, but I'm sure that you and your committee have a view about how you'd like that to be undertaken.
Well, Jimmy, look, That's a really good question, and I'll try and find an answer for you. Okay.
Okay.
In my capacity as a retired electrician gas fitter. Okay. Look, the situation is from all the documentation that we've read and information from engineers and scientists and so on, that the best way to protect downstream is to mitigate what comes into the valley.
That makes sense. Don't? That makes sense. Yeah.
So to mitigate the problems, like when you do a normal any safety job, you go into a job to do a safety analysis of a job. Now, how do I fix it? You say, well, I won't do the job, yeah, or I'll change the process of how I'm going to do the job, or I'll mitigate the problem. And sometimes you have to rely on engineering to mitigate the problem.
Mm.
And this is exactly what we have to do here. Mm. There's no natural event that we can do or something we can do different. People say, well, no more development in the valley. Well, the valley's been very restricted in development because of the fact that the government of the day, they've realised that, you know, when we started developing in there in Macquarie's day, you know, we were building at creek levels. Then they moved up. They even moved the road. We had the first tollway in Australia was built from Windsor to Parramatta, right? Because the river got silted up because of human activity along the river, so they no longer travel by boat. So they built a toll road, and the toll house still remains at Windsor, and the bridge crosses South Creek. When they first crossed over, they went around and turned right, went down and back up because they couldn't pull the cart straight up the hill because they're horse drawn. So we keep moving. We move things up all the time.
And talking about the development, I think it's not just about where people live and if your house is going to be inundated. It's about the floods separating communities. And that's what we saw in March, in that those who are very much high, Kurrajong, North Richmond, all of that actually running out of supplies because we couldn't supply them because the river had disjointed the community from the Sydney side of the river. So in that respect, the safety element of people getting to hospital, the major hospitals are on this side of the river. So when a flood event happens, it actually impacts community in a safety-wise, not just from inundation of a house, but from separating communities. And I think that's a very important point that people need to hear, especially those who may be in opposition to what you're promoting.
Darren, what you say is true, but you got to look at this what's being proposed, this mitigating dam wall, is not actually to do what you just asked. That's more the Castlereagh extension and flood-free access across the Hawkesbury and the Nepean River and up through the Blue Mountains. That is another engineering issue and another pretty hot topic because it's going through our Blue Mountains and they're talking about tunnelling now, so they think they're going to come up with an environmental solution for a really big problem. We really do need to get that major river crossing so that we have flood-free access regardless of whether we have this mitigating dam or not. The mitigating dam will protect the existing downstream development. So we've got people that live in the Bligh Park area, McGrath Hill area, Pitt Town, all those areas where have been developed over the years, Penrith, Mulgoa, Wallachia, where the building levels were set at a certain height. And over the years, they've been stepped up and stepped up to keep up with our knowledge of floods and what we do. But those houses, those people are still there. We can't relocate all those people. We can't say, oh, well, let's do a relocation program. We'll just move everyone out of the valley. And it's not a practical solution, you know. I think it's Gundy guy's been moved twice, like the small town, but country town. But I don't think we can do it. Well, it's not a feasible thing. So in answer to your question, Jim, what would I do?
Mm.
I'd get on with the job. We've spent years, copious amounts of money, inquiry after inquiry. We keep dredging up the same thing. I see the same discussion papers, the same things over and over again. We have an issue where we have I'm not saying going to say trade-off. That's not the right word. We're in an issue where we've got an environmental issue and we've got a practical human life issue, okay? If we looked at what's the environmental damage downstream by a flood as to what is environmental damage upstream by retention of the water, I'm pretty confident that the environmental damage downstream would outweigh the environmental upstream by a huge number.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and we've now got it pretty much evidence of it now. We've got massive bank erosion right down the Hawkesbury River. We've got silting of the river because of the banks in various spots. We won't know all of this for some period of time. You know, the authorities are currently working on trying to fast track bank remediation, because as you know, it's all got to be looked at, engineered, look at environmental, how do we go about it, what's the best thing to do. So they've got to do all that recovery so people can get back on with their life, put their pumps back in, get their vegetables growing, their turf growing. So all that's being done at pretty much warp speed as what would normally happen, and that's a credit to everybody.
Murray, the way you've expressed yourself is fantastic, in the sense that you've made it pretty clear there's a line, and the solution I'm hearing, and not only from you and your committee but from others, is to consider very, very favourably pushing it back rather than trying to let it go forward, because the devastation is so different when that wall opens.
And that upstream inundation is temporary.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, very, very much so.
And controlled. And the downstream devastation is not controlled. And we just saw the impact of what is a 1 in 20 flood, where if we could control that water upstream, that would have been totally different.
Yeah, we haven't got the numbers, but the flood level would have been around about 3 metres lower, which basically would have kept the bulk of the flood in the river. So it's when it leaves the riverbank and starts breaking away from the rivers and started going travelling very quickly, that's when the major problem comes along. And we had a lot of livestock lost and all that sort of thing.
Murray, it's been an absolute delight to have you here. It's a burning issue. It's one that it's got to be solved. It just can't be left. And I applaud both Darren and I, on behalf of Spotlight, your commitment and your committee's commitment to finding solutions. There's an event on tonight at Pitt Town Sports Club around 6 o'clock. Can people attend that and get a better informed about that? Because I think that's important, Darren, as a community news, that people can go to that.
Yeah, Jim, it's more over trying to give people a hand that need help. So if they've got had a loss or whatever, it's really designed to help people to get contact where they're normally business hours, they're too busy, they can't get there. It's not so much an information giving night as much as how can I help you?
Murray Smith, thank you so much. It's been a delight to have you on Spotlight with Dan and myself on 90.5. Have a great day and a great meeting tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Alive 90.5.